Everyone has a story to tell. What's yours? You're listening to Around the World with Dan Perry. Do you enjoy hearing tales of world adventure? Would you like travel advice from those who know the road well? Maybe you want to embark on a journey of your own, and you just need a bit of motivation to get started. You'll find all of that and more on Around the World with Dan Perry.
Have you ever traveled to one of those places that makes you feel almost too relaxed? Well, folks, that's where I'm at right now. Katie and I reached this little beach town yesterday in southern Sri Lanka, near the southernmost point of the island, in fact. And, well, the hotels on the beach are a little bit expensive, but we found a place just like a 5-minute walk up the hill from the beach that fits well within our price range. I'm sitting here right now looking out over the ocean, and I'm surrounded by coconut palm trees, and there's a nice gentle breeze coming in, keeping us cool during these blisteringly hot days. The water is crystal clear. The beach is just perfect. I mean, there's no trash anywhere. There's no people like trying to sell you stuff. You can just walk around, go swimming. It's a surfer's beach too. There's a nice little surfing break, and people of all skill levels are out there on their boards. It's just fantastic. This is paradise, really. I guess one downside of here, though, is that it really makes you feel relaxed. And that's where I'm at right now. I think it's great to get to these places every now and then, though, and take some time to reflect on your journeys through this life, which is where I'm at. We're about 6 months into our trip. We've traveled since August through many parts of Asia. About 4 or so months to go before we head home for the summer. And we're really loving Sri Lanka. We've been here for about 2 weeks right now, 2 more weeks to go. It's a little unfortunate that we already have our flight booked to India. We had to do that, though, just to get our visa to come here. We had to have a flight out of the country. Now we're almost wishing we could have stayed another month in Sri Lanka. Although I'm sure there's plenty to do in India, too. You look at Sri Lanka on a map, though, right next to India, and it looks tiny. How much could there possibly be to do here? Well, there's plenty. I'm sure we'll talk about that in a future podcast. I'd love to just go over all the places we've seen and things we've done, because it's been fantastic. One of the very few downsides of this country so far is that the internet kind of sucks. We've had very few spots with good Wi-Fi, although there is a pretty good 3G connection when you're in the towns, but we have limited data on our phones, and especially the upstream speed is horribly slow. So I've fallen way behind on just going through my pictures and other things like my podcast. It's a little bit hard to get these things uploaded, but I'm doing my best. So let's get into it and talk about this podcast that's been sitting on my laptop for about a week now. Katie and I were in Kandy, which is the cultural capital of the country, and it's up in the hills, about a week ago. And we met a German guy named Chris Hunter. And Chris is quite the character. He's in his late 50s, and he's been around the block. When he was a young man, he lived in India for about 5 years. Later, he lived in San Francisco for quite a while, and then after that, Berlin. And if you just take the combination of those three places, you can probably already get a pretty good idea of what kind of person Chris is. I think that comes out a little bit in this show. He and I sat down at our hotel in Kandy and shot the shit for about an hour or so, talked about travel. He told me about Indonesia and a few of the other places that I haven't been. I think he gives some good life lessons in this podcast, too. I think we had a nice conversation. At the end of the show, he talked a little bit about Asian people, or talked to them, really, to people from poorer countries in Asia, and just saying how your life is pretty good. And I mean, his message will come out, but it's really brief. And I've been thinking about this a lot lately. I think I'd like to expand on it at some point in the future. But the general idea, and this is just something that I've learned slowly as I've traveled this world, is that, well, life isn't always as it seems when you don't have the perspective. So, for example, if you're American and you've never traveled to another country, you probably have an idea in your head of what a developing country especially would look like. And I'm telling you, it's not quite right. Things are just not exactly how you think of them. How could they be? You've never seen them. And so people in developing countries quite often are a lot happier than you'd expect, and things are much safer than you'd expect as well. The people here in Sri Lanka, for the most part, are some of the friendliest and happiest people I've ever met. And this is definitely a developing country. And on the flip side of that, if you're from a developing country, all that you might know of the United States is what you've seen on TV. But the message here is that if that's all you know, you're getting Hollywood's point of view, and you're getting a glamorized version of what life is in the U.S. or in Europe or in the wealthier countries. And so you're also not getting that perspective. And so the message that Chris gives, and that I agree with, but I'd like to expand on more in the future, is that there's some great things about your culture if you're from a developing country such as Sri Lanka, and you should be proud of this. And I'm sure you already are, but things are not all glamorous in the United States. A lot of people are poor there too, and a lot of people are suffering, and a lot of people are not happy, and we have our own issues that you might not have in your own country. All right, so with all that being said, thank you very much for listening, and if you have a few spare seconds, I'd really appreciate it if you'd tell a friend about this show. I don't have any sort of advertising budget, so the only way for me to get the word out about this podcast is through word of mouth, and that's where you come in. So thanks for spreading the word, and if you have a few extra minutes beyond that, I'd really appreciate it if you'd leave me a review on iTunes or wherever you get your podcasts. Every single review helps. Thank you very much, and let's jump into my conversation right now with Chris Hunter. We should talk about Indonesia. We were just talking about that before a little bit. But I stopped you because I wanted to record it. Tell me about it. I haven't been to Indonesia.
Yeah, Indonesia is now the country of my real liking. I really like it there.
What do you like about it?
I like that it now I find everything that I used to find in India, I find now in Indonesia.
Yeah. Like what?
Like original and respectful people, curious, you know, they're curious about you. They are friendly enough, they are open enough, and it's a vast, big country with like five main islands, but I think Philippines has 7,700, but they have also, they have 15,000 islands, if
15,000?
I'm not mistaken.
15,000?
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah, you know, because...
Or are they counting every little
Yeah,
tank,
every
like
little
like
atoll.
One palm tree and
yeah, yeah,
a
every little
sand.
Atoll, you know.
Yeah, yeah. All right, well...
I think Philippines has 7,700, they say. You know.
Oh, okay. Mm. Yeah, it doesn't have that many big islands, though. But a lot of little ones.
Yeah. But the big islands, they're also diverse. You know, they're not all the same, and they're really interesting. First I went to Sumatra, which is the biggest. Actually, it's the biggest island.
Uh-huh.
It's really big and vast, and it's also more Muslim than all the other islands.
Okay.
But it's really, really, really like still complete original jungle. They do have like the rubber plantations. The rubber plantations, they are really endangering all of the Malaya archipelago, you know, because that's a money crop. No?
So they still plant today.
Yeah.
Yeah, I wrote about that a little bit in my book, my second book. It's really interesting how rubber wasn't really worth anything in the early 19th century.
Mm-hmm.
And then once they figured out how to vulcanize it, it became really valuable.
Because
suddenly you could use it in tires or whatever. And rubber is only from the Amazon, the rubber tree.
Actually, it is from the Amazon.
Yeah. Only that. It wasn't in Indonesia or anywhere else.
It's another plant that came from the Americas, you know.
Yeah, one of many.
Yeah.
And at first the rubber tree became super valuable. And
in the Second World War, especially in the Second World War.
No, well, much before that.
Even before.
Probably 1870s.
Really?
They started building these big cities in the jungle in Brazil, like Manaus is the
Manaus.
Big one.
Oh, yeah.
It's like a million people, and it's deep and 1,000 miles from the coast.
Away.
Way up in the Amazon. And most of the towns around there don't have any roads leading to them. And Manaus does, but still it doesn't get used much. It's mostly the river.
Mm.
And these barons, became really, really rich on rubber and built this elegant, beautiful city. But then a guy named Henry Wickham exported a bunch of seeds to England.
Yeah.
Took a whole ship full of rubber seeds.
And then...
And they started planting them.
To Malaysia.
Yeah, Malaysia, Indonesia, the colonies, the British colonies. Mm. Probably some in India.
Yeah.
Sri Lanka.
Probably,
and they started growing there. And then all of a sudden, to get the rubber in the Amazon, I mean, you had to go into the jungle and look for a rubber tree.
Mm.
And then I don't know how they do it, if they tap it or...
Yeah,
what.
To tap
these,
it.
These guys would take serious risks with getting malaria, getting eaten by jaguars, and... it was a big expedition to get rubber. But then once they started planting these plantations, they could just go out in their backyard and get them. So it was much easier. And the price of rubber just crashed. And so all of that whole region, the economy just collapsed because it was all built on rubber.
Mm.
So interesting. It's interesting to learn that there still are these rubber plantations.
Yeah, there's still all these rubber plantations and the refineries. They really, you know, where there's a refinery, it really stinks, you know. It's really a bad smell, miles.
What about air pollution? Does that get bad too?
When they burn like harvests and stuff, that happens. Then mixes with the air pollution and then gets really bad. Like I think 2-3 years ago we had that in Asia, no? In Malaysia and Singapore, they were choking on the air from burning rice fields, paddy fields, and burning maybe. Also the rubber, but basically burning rice fields, I think.
Hmm. And burning rice fields.
And that's the way also they get rid of the jungle for more rubber trees. You know, they just burn it.
Oh,
I see. So that added up to a big cloud that was hovering over, even went as far as southern Thailand, you know.
That's awful. So
that was 2-3 years ago.
They're still cutting down native forests to plant rubber. Terrible stuff.
Mm.
So the rubber still all comes from trees? It's not synthetic? I just would have thought in this day and age they have some better way of doing it than trees. Huh.
That's a good point, you know, but I think they probably still comes from the trees.
Oh, wow.
Because otherwise they...
Well, that's pretty awful. So Sumatra is mostly Muslim and jungle.
Yeah.
What else is there? Java? Is that?
Java is a smaller island, but it's really densely populated. As much as like Japan or Germany, where there's a lot of people on a square kilometer or square mile, a lot of people.
Also Muslim?
Yeah, Muslim.
Oh, okay.
But Java being like so many people, like I think in Java there's already 100 million on that not so big island. There's like 100 million people living there. But because there is so many, they are being trained very well and they're very educated and they're a little bit progressive. They're not like Muslim hillbillies as in Sumatra, where there's Muslim hillbillies, you know, you can call them, you know.
Okay.
Mm.
So many people in Indonesia.
Yeah, yeah.
You forget about that sometimes if you don't go there.
Yeah.
I was just thinking about this. The Olympics is starting now, the Winter Olympics.
The Winter Olympics in Korea.
In Korea. And I remember last time, where was the Olympic? Oh, maybe in Japan or... somewhere like a while ago, maybe not last time, but
mm-hmm.
And a lot of Americans were complaining because nothing was live on TV. It was all recorded. And I was just thinking about it now. That's probably going to happen again. But what they don't realize is half the world lives very close to that time zone. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like China is 1 hour behind Korea.
Korea, yeah.
Japan is the same time.
Mm.
Indonesia is about the same.
Yeah, yeah.
All of Southeast
Hong Kong,
Asia,
yeah.
Hong Kong.
Hong Kong, Vietnam.
Yeah, I mean, if you don't count India, you're already talking over 2 billion people.
Mm.
And if you do count India, that's only a couple hours behind.
Probably 3
million. It's half the world.
Yeah.
Now you've got half of the world's population within like 3 hours of that time zone.
And everybody watches Winter Olympics on their phones. And
oh, they watch it live on their phones now?
Probably, yeah.
Probably, yeah, I guess.
There must be streams, no? And
I guess I'm not so up on that stuff. But, yeah, I guess Americans can't complain quite so much when there's 300 million of us and there's 3 billion of them, 10 times the population. It's crazy to think about, huh? Have you seen that map of the world that shows a map of the world,
mm-hmm.
and then there's a circle on the map.
Where do people live now?
Yeah, yeah. Right. And it's not a very big circle. And it says more people live inside the circle than outside of it.
Mm.
And at first it's like, no, that's not possible. Mm. But then you look at it, you go, actually, yeah, I guess they are right. Because that includes all of India and China.
Mm.
Okay.
Speaking about 300 million Americans, I think Indonesia is the biggest Muslim country with also 300 million.
Yeah.
Followed by Pakistan that have, I think... Huh. 180 million.
Wow, a lot of people.
Yeah.
But is all of Indonesia Muslim? Aren't parts of it Hindu?
Yeah. Bali is Hindu, but it's a real small minority. There's more Christians. Actually, there's a... But I think, if I'm not wrong, there are only 5 or 6%
are Christian.
Christian, yeah. Maybe 10. But I think six, maybe 7. Let's say 7. Let's compromise.
Okay.
I don't have the book here, so I can't look it
up. I'll look it up later.
Maybe 7% Christians, you know. But they're also very, they're successful. And somebody just recently told me that they supposedly own 30% of the businesses in the land.
Okay. So they've got a disproportionate amount of the money, by far. Huh. Yeah, we were just looking at, Katie and I were looking at jobs. And one of the schools we were looking at was in Bali.
Oh yeah.
And it looked really nice, but the school itself, it wasn't quite at the same tier as some of the other schools she was looking at. So. But
Bali is an interesting island.
Yeah.
And yeah, I think they've kind of moved with the time. They have a lot of Australian package tourists that move in there and then stay for 2-3 weeks and then they move back. So they get
party.
Yeah, just party.
Yeah.
But in Bali, I think they did it in a smart way because all the Australians, they congregated in one place, you know, and that's it. That's where they party, you know.
Okay.
So I was in Bali only 3 days before I flew to New Zealand. And I was expecting, that's why I didn't stay there. That's why I booked my flight and I just arrived 2 or 3 days before my flight because I was expecting an experience like similar to Goa or Phuket. These places were like paradise, like 30 years ago, and I expected it to be completely wasted. But I was really surprised about Bali that it kept its a flair and attraction. You know, the people were still nice. The Hindu people were nice, and I felt really good. And then I was really sorry I had to leave. You know.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Katie and I thought it's going to be too crowded with Australians and tourists and the Eat, Pray, Love tourists.
Hmm?
Eat, Pray, Love.
Eat, you know, Pray, Love tourists.
The book. Where did she go? The Liz Gilbert. She went to Italy, and she ate, and ate, and ate, and gained the weight. And then she went to India for like 4 months and
prayed.
Went to some ashrams and.
Oh really?
Yeah. And then the last one was Indonesia. She went. I'm pretty sure it was Bali. And she found love there.
Oh nice.
And that was the book. You don't know this book? Oh, okay.
I should write it down.
Yeah.
Maybe you have it as an e-book.
Sure it's on e-book. Maybe I don't have it, but
maybe Katie.
I read it a while ago, probably 10 years ago when it came out. Yeah, I mean, it's a memoir, a travel memoir.
Mm. I'm interested.
Good. It's, yeah, very, very famous book. They made it into a movie.
Like The Beach.
The Beach with DiCaprio.
Yeah.
Yeah, I haven't seen that movie. I've heard, though, if you actually go to that beach, that it's just a shithole. It's just like there's
nowadays
thousands of tourists, and they all want a picture, the exact same picture of the beach.
Yeah.
They're just crowding it. And that it's just a horrible experience. Unfortunately, that happens a lot.
Unfortunately.
A lot of places.
Yeah.
But I think a lot of people, the mistake they make if they don't travel much is they think that all these places are
real.
These places are ruined.
Oh, ruined.
So the whole... Yeah. The whole world is just, why go anywhere?
That's why I really, you know, but on the other hand, I would really not want to recommend places like that anymore for the same reason, you know. When I was young in Goa, we say, yeah, go to this place, it's really nice. But all these nice places we were talking about are completely destroyed now. Mm. Like Hampi, Pushkar, Goa, Gokarna is now out, Varkala, all these nice places are completely built up and destroyed, basically.
Okay.
Or Manali. You know, Manali. same thing, you know.
Manali itself had a lot of local tourists.
Yeah.
Yeah, very busy.
Yeah.
But Vashishta is still quiet.
Still
old Manali still is quiet.
Mm.
Quiet. Old Manali is...
You can always get away. Still, even in Goa, I heard that when you go to the southern beaches, they're still, like, remote and open.
Jesus, we went up over that, the pass that's near Manali.
The Rotang.
Rotang pass, yeah. And... all the way down the other side.
Mm.
And
Lahaul and Spiti, incredible.
Yeah, incredible. Yeah. And then went down to this Daba that was, we had to walk about 6 hours to reach it. And it's just like one guy living there. That place isn't ruined. That Daba still has these snowy mountains right behind it and whitewater river. Mm. It's just pristine.
Mm.
It's just beautiful.
It's great, yeah.
And then the ride from Manali up to Leh. Have you been there?
Yeah. Yeah.
That ride was amazing.
Amazing, yeah.
I mean, there's a few tourists here and there, but not many.
Not many, yeah.
No, so...
And on that road, if you go by bus, you know, and look into these abysses, they're incredible.
Ooh, yeah. We went over passes that were like, I forget, I think like 17,000 feet almost.
Yeah.
Or 16,000 at least.
At least. At
really least. High passes that... You just get out of the car and walk around and you're out of breath right away.
Yeah.
Amazing places.
Mm.
And there's dabas near the pass. The guy's selling chai.
Yeah.
You could sleep there for a dollar a night. You know, it still exists.
Yeah.
I guess so that's the point I was trying to make is a lot of places have been ruined, but it doesn't take much effort to get away from those.
You can still find adventure. And that's why I'm saying Indonesia, you know.
It's still okay? Mm. A lot of it is?
Yeah, a lot of it is.
And what about, I'm always confused. What is East Timor? Is that a different country?
Now it is. I think that is why they had the civil war about 18 years ago.
Oh.
Yeah, they split away and they're Christian. Mm. They're actually Christian. And that's why the Christians and Muslims went at each other for a while, you know, I think. But there was quite a few casualties. I think there was also into the thousands.
Wow.
It must have been bloody, you know.
Mm. But now they're separate.
Now they're separate, you know. Germany was one of the first countries to acknowledge the new...
Does the whole world acknowledge them now, or is it just a small...
No, thing? I think so. I think so. Now they have real independence, and the good, fortunate thing is that all the last presidents of Indonesia were more or less good guys.
Oh, okay.
Good presidents,
okay.
You know, like humanist, you know, not hardcore, like... After the Second World War, when Indonesia gained independence, they had like these two presidents, they were a little bit too authoritarian.
Then
there was, for instance, there was a Chinese exodus also because of ethnical trouble. You know, the Indonesians didn't like the Chinese anymore because they were well known as businessmen, successful businessmen. So that was one. There was one thing, and then maybe there was also ongoing Christian trouble.
So they had multiple people to hate.
Yeah.
Things are better there now?
Yeah. The president right now seems to be really a good guy.
Yeah.
But the thing is always, you know, I would like to live there. But it's a corrupt country, so with the visas and stuff. But I would like to live there, but the thing is, like, when they have another president, another election, things could change again.
Yeah, you never know.
You never know.
Yeah, actually, somebody told me recently their story about getting a driver's license there. And there was just so much paperwork and corruption and officials. And I think they said they would have had to wait like 6 months to be able to drive a car.
No kidding.
And that's not like learning how to drive. That's just already having a license from another country and getting one there. And I think they ended up just bribing some official and getting the license in a day.
That's it. You know,
you just have to do it. Otherwise, you're just screwed. Right. You're just stuck in this paperwork trail. And it just never ends.
It never ends. Yeah, that's a well put. That's
a little sad when the only way to do things is bribery.
Bribery, yeah.
You know, like there's no legit way to do it.
That's the sad thing about Indonesia, you know. Yeah. Otherwise, Indonesia is a really nice country. The people are really nice. The people mostly really
nice.
Oh,
that's
cool. Yeah. They don't really have a lot of hardcore radical Muslims.
Oh, okay.
There's some of it. But it seems like they leave the foreigners alone.
Yeah.
Except, okay, we all remember that terrible terrorist attack in Bali 2003, but that's a real exception. You know?
Yeah. Well, that's good to hear.
Yeah.
Right, I do remember that a lot. Mm. Yeah.
I think 50 Australians or so.
Yeah, mostly Australians.
Yeah.
Yeah, terrible.
It's not nice, yeah.
No, not a nice thing to do at all.
No. I mean, I don't like these people either, you know, they get drunk and shit-faced, you know, but then I just don't go there, you know.
Right. Right. You need to kill them?
Yeah.
Well, so the other place you just mentioned a lot was India. And you...
Yeah,
when was the last time you were in India?
2009.
Oh, you were there kind of recently then. Okay.
Nine years ago, yeah.
I guess it's been a while. God, 2009 was 9 years ago.
Yeah. Time moves fast. But that was my last time, and it was consciously my last time. I really don't want to go back to India.
No, why not?
No, because I had a wonderful time there in the 80s and 90s, and I really think that India is changing or changed to its disadvantage. You know, for instance, now they have this like right-wing president, Mr. Modi, and then... Yeah, what really bugs me about India also is that they cannot control their population growth, you know, and then it's very chaotic country, it's quite corrupt, you know, and...
Yeah, it's intense, for
It's
sure.
intense. Yeah, sure. It's intense, and I had a wonderful time there in the early days, like 80s, 90s, and I just said, I'll leave it at that. As I already said in our conversation, I find what I found in India before, I find now in other places, like, for instance, here in Sri Lanka... Uh-huh. Which is a little bit more civilized, and civilized people are friendly, people are respectful.
Yeah.
You know, like if you go to India and you meet people that are like a little bit like disrespectful or so, really go away from them, you know, don't...
Sure.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, we'll still go there to India in about a month.
Yeah.
And Katie hasn't been there yet. So
yeah.
I think she's really going to enjoy it.
I really want, I'm keen on wanting to know how you experience it and how you like it.
I'm excited. I mean, but even here, I'm really liking Sri Lanka.
Yeah,
so
me too. Me too. I'm really surprised.
I love all the sights and sounds. We were just in the train station the other day in Colombo, just waiting for the train. We both got a tub of popcorn, and we were just both eating popcorn. And Katie mentioned it's like being in a movie.
Yeah.
And it's so true. It's this old colonial train station. It's like you're in the 1950s.
Yeah.
And all these like steel, wrought iron archways overhead, and the people dressed in their saris, and very interesting, colorful dress. The ancient train that I didn't even recognize it as an engine. The engine of the train just looks like a box.
Yeah.
And then we got third class compartment tickets because that's all that was left. It's like $1.50 to go on a train for 4 hours. And then we couldn't get a seat, so we stood. And I just stood there looking out the window the whole time. They don't care. Like in most of the trains we've taken have been in China.
Mm.
And there they lock the doors when the train's moving.
Oh, yeah?
Oh, yeah. Conductor comes and locks it.
Really?
So you can maybe open the windows, but they're small windows.
Mm.
Here, you can just leave the door open,
and
no one cares. You can just lean out the door.
Mm.
So I love that, sticking my head outside. It's not the safest thing to do, but stick my head out and feel the breeze. And watch the mountains go by and all the tropical scenery. It's just fantastic.
Mm.
Yeah, one of my favorite things. So I'm glad that kind of travel still is alive and well.
Mm. Yeah, India is similar. They have still these old trains and old tracks. And
yeah.
Once in a while they have accidents, actually.
Yeah, oh, do they?
That's scary.
Have you been keeping up at all with American news, with the Amtrak accidents?
Oh, yeah, yeah, I heard about
that. I think there's been four in the last year or so?
Yeah,
four fatal accidents?
That's incredible.
God, what is wrong with us?
Yeah, like, yeah.
It's this highly developed, advanced nation. We can't even control the trains.
Maintain, you know, and maintain bridges and roads.
No, I heard can't it even from do all friends. That. Yeah. It's falling apart.
Yeah.
What is going on? I mean, and then you just spend a week in China and you see all the gleaming, brand new infrastructure.
Mm.
Trains that go 300 kilometers an hour all over the country now.
Mm. And are safe now.
Very safe.
Yeah.
Those trains, they seal you in. It's all airtight, because it goes so fast.
Mm-hmm.
So the toilets even have a real tank. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? Like the old trains, there's just a hole in the ground.
Yeah, yeah. Here too, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah. But the new ones, it's all sealed off.
Mm.
Everything's exactly on time.
Mm.
Never even a minute late. Mm. Everything runs exactly according to clockwork. And that's China today. And boy, we're trying to compete against that with our trains that crash and kill people every couple of months.
Amazing.
Bridges that fall down.
Yeah.
Jesus.
Yeah.
Yeah. Hopefully we'll be able to fix all that.
Yeah.
Move forward. Maybe with Elon Musk. Maybe he's going to save us. The Hyperloop. I was telling you about
that. Yeah, we need a savior.
God, we need that. We need the Hyperloop. I mean, that's going to be awesome if we could get that to work. Go under a tunnel, underneath the earth. You're in D.C., you get on a train, not even a train, a car of some sort.
Mm.
Shoot through a vacuum tube.
Yeah.
Half an hour later, you're in New York City. Wow. Wow, that'd be amazing if you can pull it off. Yeah, we'll see, though.
A tunnel, you know, it's that long, that must cost a lot. That must be.
It must be.
Expensive.
Yeah. Wouldn't there be, like, electric wires that you hit when you're drilling? I don't know. I don't know, but I think I believe in Elon Musk that he'll find a way to do it. He'll make it happen.
I would want to come back to Indonesia.
Please. And say,
you know, like, okay, Sumatra in itself is already like one island that's really like remarkable. But then there's this other island, Borneo, which is even more remote, and it's more, and I went to Indonesian side of Borneo. Borneo split between Malaysia and Indonesia. Yeah?
Okay.
Yeah. So I was Malaysian side. It's quite developed. You know, it's quite developed. It's also lots of rubber plantation, lots of burnt down forest, quite developed, good roads. But the Indonesian side is still very, very remote. And I've been only to a little part of it.
Oh, but is there a lot of jungle there too?
Yeah, there's a lot of jungle. There's a lot of jungle, a lot of wild animals.
Baboons or
orangutans.
Oh, yeah, orangutan. Yeah.
They even have small elephants. They call them dwarf elephants, and and also small rhinos.
Oh wow!
Yeah, and then everything else, you know, like birds you have never seen before, and monkeys of every creed.
Huh.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. We'll have to go there.
I'll have to go. Borneo is also on my list, and as a matter of fact, what I hear that the people there are different again, you know, that they're probably Muslim, that there's always Christians. Everywhere in Indonesia there's Christians, as a matter of fact. But the Christians, they don't really stick out, you know, they keep to themselves, they don't make a big fuss because still Islam is the thing, you know, and like,
yeah.
There's no way they're going to take it from the people, you know, they're really embedded in Islam.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. But Borneo, that would be for an adventurer. Yeah, that would be a real adventure.
Okay.
Like, really, you could go into the interior and maybe like having incredible experiences. I'm even very respectful, almost to say a little bit afraid of it. You know,
that. Sure. Well, it's good to be a little bit afraid of the wilderness.
Wilderness, exactly, like extreme wilderness. You know.
Yeah.
You know, you alone you will be completely lost, you know. You need either good partners, and then you need also locals, you know, to really be on your side, you know.
Right. Mm. Yeah, yeah. You can't mess around with that stuff.
No, it's dangerous. You can't just walk off and say, hey, I'm going for a walk or something, you know.
Sure.
It could be your last walk, you know.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, well, it'd be kind of fun to get eaten by something big, wouldn't it?
Yeah.
Something's got to get you.
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't know.
But I want to share one real experience that I had in Sumatra that, wow, that was so incredible, man. I couldn't believe it, you know. I was in this kind of national park where they have like wild orangutans, you know. None of this, like, these stations where they keep orangutans and... You know, where they're half wild, none of that. They were real wild orangutans, and there was a river there, you know. So I was hanging out with some locals at the river. There was this one ranger who always made a big fire because there's so much wood coming down the river and drying in the sun. So he was always, there was a big fire there when I was there for a few days, you know, and he would always throw wood in, you know. It was huge, you know, I mean, maybe five meters in diameter.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, yeah, it was quite a big fire. But anyway, so we were hanging out there, and even I remember we had a little bit of weed, so we smoked a little bit of weed. And then, you know, there was these local fishermen, and on the other side, you know, they were like casting nets and stuff. And, you know, one time I really couldn't believe it because the river was quite wild, you know, and it was, they had rapids there, you know. And I can't believe it, you know, this one fisherman, you know, he crossed that river, you know. Maybe he knew, you know, like he knew where to go, you know, and it wasn't really that deep, maybe on the deeper parts, maybe only 2-3 meters deep, you know, so.
Deep enough.
Yeah, deep enough. But you could walk, basically, but the current was really strong. I would have never dared to attempt anything like that.
Did he keep his boat pointed upstream?
No, no boat, man. He was on foot.
Oh, on foot, man. Oh, I thought you meant on boat.
No, they were on foot, and he crossed that river, basically because he saw me, you know.
Oh, just to come
talk
to you?
Yeah, basically.
Oh, man.
No, but he didn't come that close, but he just came across, and then on my side there was a cave, you know, and then wow, that was an incredible sight. I do have some photos of that.
Oh, of this caveman?
Yeah, like
Or was he a caveman?
No, he was not a caveman. He was just a fisher. And he must have lived there in some village and stuff. I never understood why he came across, and he didn't even come close, you know. Like, he didn't come over and say hello, you know, but I don't know why he did all that.
Just curious?
To me, it seemed like extremely dangerous. I couldn't believe it, you know.
Sure, wading across a rapid river.
Yeah, for sure. That was, like, really something to behold, you know. Too bad I don't have these photos here.
Oh, but maybe you can show me later. I can put them on my website.
I have them on my sticks, you know, and my sticks are in Colombo, in Nekombo.
Ah, okay.
Yeah. Man, I have 3 years of photographs, you know, and I'm really worried. And I really want to sit down and look at them again, you know.
Well, yeah. Well, so they're just sitting there in a safe place, I hope?
Yeah, I hope so, with a family, you know. And
okay.
I'm coming back there. And,
okay, good.
Yeah.
I've heard this story many times over the years of travelers. Maybe it's not quite as common today, but 10 years ago especially, of meeting people and all their photos get stolen.
Yeah, that's true. Like when in the times of Diaz, not the Diaz negative positives.
Yeah, well, especially before digital. But even once digital cameras came out, a lot of people they travel for 6 months and had nowhere to put their photos. They just leave it on their camera.
On a camera.
And if the camera got stolen, the camera itself wasn't the problem. All the pictures.
Yeah. That would be a big loss, you know.
Yeah, nowadays I guess people are more likely to upload their photos right away.
Yeah.
Still, be careful with that.
Yeah, let's do that, you know, like, let's do that. My telephone is so full, you have to help me to find some way of...
I'll do what I can.
I know I have Google Photos, you know, but if I deleted them now, then they would also go off. Like, Google Photos is Google Photos, no? As long as you have it on your memory, Google Photos will also have it. But if you delete them, it's not like uploaded to Google Cloud. I have to upload them to Google Cloud, and then they're safe. No?
Okay, yeah, make sure you do that.
Yeah, let's do that.
Another thing a lot of people don't realize is they'll put their photos on Facebook and then delete them off their camera and say, well, it's on Facebook, it's good, I've got it. And they do, but they've taken a 20 megapixel photo, and Facebook shrinks it.
Shrinks it, yeah.
Down to like half a megapixel.
Yeah, yeah. Or and even less.
Even less. So yeah. Now if you want to go print it later, you it looks like crap when you print it because it's so small now. Mm. And you don't have the original anymore.
On the other hand, Dan, I really have to say, you know, that, you know, I'm taking a lot of really great photos, you know, but nobody wants to see them anymore, you know, because everybody really takes their own photos and the whole world is flooded with pictures. Yeah. Everywhere there's screens and stuff. So great photos everywhere. You know, nobody's interested in it anymore. 30 years ago, it was different. People would go from school to school and still make
like slideshows.
Slideshows, you know. Yeah. I remember even like maybe 15 years ago, I remember still seeing like invitations in Berlin, you know, to slideshows. Somebody's been to whatever, Bolivia, Ecuador, right. Africa, you know. Yeah. But nowadays, it's completely died off, you know, because there's so many photos everywhere. And then you show somebody your photos and they say, oh, yeah, yeah, you know. Then,
right, you know, right.
It's amazing, you know, it's amazing.
But I mean, I just know what's going to happen every time I come home now, so I don't care that much, but... Like, yeah, people at home, they want to hear about your trip, but only for a couple minutes.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
5 minutes tops,
yeah,
that's
yeah,
it.
Yeah,
so that's what I always expect now when I come home.
Mm-hmm.
Right. It's a different world now.
It's a different world,
man. You can just type anything you want to see. You want it, like, we're in Kandy now.
Yeah.
And we're at a specific hostel. You could probably go on Google and just type view from the balcony of this hostel in this city.
Exactly.
And you'd get a picture of it.
And yeah, and you don't have to take it. No.
No.
Basically, it's true. You know, basically, it's true.
Yeah, I think it's almost to that point now where I love photography, so I'm really into it.
I'm still into it.
For myself.
Yeah.
So I still do it.
I still do it.
But if I were not into photography and just traveling...
It's not necessary.
No, I think I'd probably have my phone and do a couple pictures with friends I'd
here
meet.
And there.
Just for our,
yeah.
just to have
Facebook.
Pictures of ourselves.
Yeah, yeah.
But I wouldn't take many other pictures.
Mm.
Even today, when I go to the really famous sites, I barely photograph them because it's been done so many times.
Mm.
I remember seeing the Lincoln Memorial in D.C.
My dad.
I was with my parents, and my dad took one picture of it. And
Abe
it was all,
sitting.
It was crooked and it blurry, and I was like, "Oh, Dad, you don't know how to take a picture." But I was like, I said, you know what? I'm not even going to take any more pictures of this thing. We all know what it looks like. No need. I should show you, or I'll put up on my website too, a video a guy made recently. This is really good.
Mm-hmm.
He went on Instagram and he took, he found pictures of the famous sites of the world, of mostly Europe. And he put them all together in a video. I mean, you just have to see the video, but everyone's taking the exact same pictures. And he shows like 1,000 people taking the exact same picture of the Leaning Tower of Pisa.
Yeah.
And each picture is like one frame of the video. So
that's
what's
interesting.
The point, you know?
It's interesting.
It's good in a way. It takes some burden off of you.
That you don't have to take them, no?
Right, you don't have to. Leave that up to National Geographic and whatever.
Yeah. Yeah.
But I'm still into it, like I said. So
when I was in San Francisco in the 80s, there between 85 and 89, I remember I went to a movie and there was a guy who was taking photos of people in the nude.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, basically actually focusing on their private parts.
Oh.
So he was taking a lot of women and a lot of men, you know. So you see, you get a lot of female vaginas, and you get a lot of male penises, you know, with scrotums, you know, and all looks different, you know. That was really interesting, actually.
Oh, okay.
You know, that was really amazing.
Yeah. Have you ever been to Hobart?
New York.
In Tasmania?
Tasmania, no, unfortunately not. No.
No, okay. If you ever get to Hobart, there's a museum there with this eccentric dude who started it. It's very famous in Hobart. I can't remember the name of it right now off the top of my head. Mm. But there's this exhibit there of something like that.
Oh, really?
Of a guy... Oh, no, it was plaster molds of vaginas.
Oh, yeah,
like,
yeah.
300 vaginas in a row.
Wow.
All in plaster.
Wow.
Yeah,
that should
all,
be
all look different.
Interesting, no?
Yeah,
that'd be...
very strange.
Yeah.
But I guess that... That's probably not even shocking anymore, though. It's just the
if you've seen it once,
Yeah. I don't know. I think culture kind of comes and goes in waves, you know, mm-hmm. of being more open and being more closed.
Mm-hmm. But it's interesting. I was wondering about it. I didn't ask you yet, but so you've been to Australia, yeah?
Yeah.
New Zealand?
Not New Zealand.
Yeah, but Australia. Yeah. You've been there, really, huh?
Yeah, wow. For a couple months.
Mm-hmm.
But Australia's so big, you need a year.
It's huge.
Yeah. Yeah, it's huge.
Did you like it?
Oh, yeah, I loved Australia. Yeah. Have you been there?
Yeah, once, long time ago.
Oh, okay.
But that would be, there's still always an open option for me to go back to Australia, yeah.
I loved Australia. Really? The only downside is it's expensive.
It's really expensive, like New Zealand.
Yeah, people are great.
Yeah.
See, I went there after having lived in China for a little while mm-hmm. and struggling with the language.
Yeah.
And then Australia, it's like, oh, I can just talk to you.
Speak English,
oh,
yeah.
Oh, that's great, okay. Yeah, great, great people, really helpful, friendly. Mm. People who, a lot of Australians travel, like we just discussed. So.
Did you see Greg when you were in Australia?
Greg, yeah.
You met him? He was back in Australia. Yeah,
yeah, we traveled together for a while.
In Australia?
In Australia.
Oh, that's good.
We did a 100-kilometer hike across the ocean, the Great Ocean Walk, together.
Nice.
So that was great.
Mm.
He lives in a van. So we traveled around by van a little bit.
Yeah.
I think if you go to Australia, that's the way to do it.
Mm-hmm.
Since it's so expensive,
you
buy an old van and you just sleep in that.
Mm.
And he has one that can run on natural gas.
Or petrol.
Two tanks, so he can split
back
and forth.
Very good.
Yeah, because natural gas is a little cheaper.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And then you can do it. You can get by without spending too much money, especially if you don't drink. Alcohol is super expensive.
And cigarettes are super expensive.
Cigarettes. Oh.
Yeah, alcohol and cigarettes.
You better quit smoking, man, if you go to Australia.
God.
That'll kill you. That's just spending your money.
Money there, yeah.
On cigarettes will kill you faster than the cigarettes.
Mm. But you know, it's kind of perverse, you know, because in New Zealand it's expensive too, and people pick up cigarette butts from the street, you know, and then roll their own.
The end of them.
It's amazing.
Yeah, there's always the bums that do that in the States.
Poor
too.
People.
Homeless people.
Poor people, yeah.
Yeah. Smoke it down to the filter.
Or smoke it down to the filter, yeah.
Right. And then the rich people throw out half their
cigarette. Yeah. And you can't really ask anybody for a cigarette because a cigarette already costs a dollar, you know?
Right. Yeah, I met this guy in England once, or from England, who said the standard price now, if you're out walking around London drinking late at night and you want a cigarette, no one will just bum one anymore.
No.
And the standard price is now £1.
For a cigarette.
For one cigarette.
That's incredible. Huh?
Yep.
Because when we were kids, you know, we could walk up to somebody and say, hey, can I bum a cigarette? No.
Yeah.
And usually they'd say, yeah, why not, you know, but it's more, now that it got so expensive, you know, you probably get a bad look at, you know, they'll say, fuck off or something, be rude, you know.
Yeah, it's an interesting one, because cigarettes are one of those products that, depending on where you are in the world, it can either be super expensive or really cheap.
Or really cheap, yeah.
Like, I was just in the Philippines, it was... I think it was about 5 cents for one.
Yeah.
No, even less. 3 cents. It was and a half pesos.
Cheap, huh?
Yeah, you could buy one at a time, and it was 3 cents.
Wow, that's cheap.
Or 4 cents.
Indonesia,
but very, very cheap.
Indonesia is cheap.
And then other places, it's £1.
Yeah.
So it's like $1.20.
Hmm.
I mean, 40 times more expensive.
Hmm.
For the same exact product.
Amazing.
Wow. Yeah. What else is going on in the world? You don't spend much money, do you?
I like 2 months in Sri Lanka now, I spent exactly about 100,000 Sri Lanka rupees, which is, I think, $625 for 2 months.
In 2 months, you spent $625?
Yeah.
So like 300 a month.
Yeah.
75 a week.
Yeah.
That's $10 a day. $11
a day. Something like that.
Yeah. Wow. I guess we probably spent about $10 or $11 yesterday, but that's just one really cheap day for us.
Mm.
And that's a normal day for you, huh?
Mm.
Huh. You have any secret wisdom you want to bestow upon the people? how you can do this so cheaply?
Travelers or?
Yeah, people who are listening. Like, look, I don't know, man. We're just out and you just don't seem to spend much.
Yeah, no, I don't need to spend much.
Like, you're wearing a shirt now that you got for free, right?
For free, yeah. These pants I picked up somewhere because my... Where was it? Yeah, sometimes people leave clothes around behind in guest houses.
Sure.
Like yesterday, I got this hat, no?
Yeah, you got a nice hat.
I got another hat
because I
lost my last hat in the last guest house, you know, so somebody's probably picked up my hat, you know?
Yeah. It's interesting how that works.
Yeah.
And you don't need to buy a map because your shirt has the map of Sri Lanka on it.
What would be a good advice for young travelers? But the best advice is, you know, that in Asia you have to bargain. You know, don't pay the first price that you're being asked, you know.
Right.
Yeah. So package tourists, you know, they don't care. They actually pay the first price. But that means also that they spoil it for the more hardcore travelers, you know.
Because
They ruin it because that brings the prices up, because then all of a sudden the locals realize they don't need to bargain. They can put their prices sky high and people will still pay it, you know.
Yeah.
And then also the real travelers like us that actually communicate with them, they're a little bit left out, you know.
Right. Right. And then they just, locals stop seeing you as a person, like, among them that...
Mm-hmm.
Like, everyone else is just another human, and then, oh, here's a foreigner.
Yeah.
Oh, he's a walking ATM.
ATM. Okay. That is sometimes, that's really disconcerting, you know. I would really rather not have them, but that's already become reality, you know. Mm. Walking ATM, I hate it, you know, I hate it, because...
Well, it's not true everywhere you go, but in these places that we're talking about that are ruined, really, from too much tourism, that's what it is. And, God, some of these places we were in the Philippines, like, they have tours that you can do.
Mm.
And the tour has a certain price, and it's a pretty, pretty darn high price, probably three times what a local would make in a day, just to do a little boat trip.
Yeah.
And there's no way to bargain. It's just,
exactly.
They're not coming down. The whole town, they've all fixed it. It's done.
It's rigged.
Yeah, it's all rigged.
You see, people here go to safaris to see elephants or to see turtles laying their eggs and stuff, but you don't really need to go to a safari. If you really want it, you can get it, you know. I just send some photos. I send you photos too when we hook up on Facebook, you know. I've just seen a herd of 10 wild elephants, you know, riding with a friend of mine on the back of the bike, and these... All of a sudden, we saw elephant shit on the road, you know. My friend said, elephants, you know. And then we drove a little further, and sure enough, they were there. 10 elephants, maybe 3 adults and 7 younger ones, you know.
Wow.
Yeah, really cute.
That's really awesome.
Yeah, that's awesome.
So do you think you just got lucky, or did you go looking for animals?
I'm looking, but it is luck, you know, but you don't really need to go and pay a guide or safari. I hardly ever pay guides, you know. Yeah. I don't pay, like you noticed yesterday, I also don't pay for cover charges for temples or anything like that. Either there's a back way in or I climb a wall, you know. I refuse to pay that, especially for cultural things, you know.
Yeah,
and it's actually only tourists that pay. Sometimes it's like, even for a national park, you know, you pay, say, $100, but a local will pay only $5, you know?
Sure.
So that's, then you see what it all comes up to. It's just a money-making scheme. And, you know, they expect white people to have that money, but some of us don't have it, actually. Like, I was traveling all of my life. I was very, very poor. I really didn't have it, so I didn't even consider paying that money, you know, so.
Yeah. Yeah, I had this experience going to the Taj Mahal.
Oh, you know, in 1981, I saw it for 5 rupees. Okay, 5 rupees at that time was maybe 60, 70 American cents. You know,
but now, that much? Okay.
Yeah, but now you pay what, $20?
$20.
Yeah, you know.
$20, and the locals pay like 25 cents.
Yeah, that's it.
And I had this argument with someone where I probably... said too much, but she said, well, look, the local people are really poor and they can't afford $20 and you can afford it.
Yeah.
But I guess my point was I went with a friend who's also from India.
Mm.
And but he makes really good money in the States working.
And here to pay only 25 cents.
Yeah, and here I am, I don't have a job.
Yeah.
I'm just a bum.
Yeah.
Man, I...
Yeah.
He's got a lot more money
than me. Than
you're you're making an assumption based on someone's nationality.
I have two stories for that too, you know. I was hitchhiking to see the glacier, the Pepito Moreno Glacier in...
Perito Moreno.
In Calafate, no?
Yeah,
I was hitchhiking to see it, just to save the money. And a really nice family picked me up with their two daughters in the backseat. And we arrived at the gate, you know, and I forgot to tell them, you know, to actually... Because... You know, the guy said, oh, you guys are all Argentinians, you know, and one of the girls bloated, oh, yeah, four Argentinians and one foreigner, you know. Uh-huh. But the foreigner paid like, how many thousand pesos? But a substantial amount more, you know. And I was going, oh, no, why did you say that? You know, and as you see, I'm not really looking Nordic, you know, I could have easily been an Argentinian.
Oh, you could easily fit in there. Yeah.
So I thought it was really, I was really sorry about her.
That's not good. Yeah.
And then the second question is a long time ago, similar story. A long time ago, I went to the Egyptian Museum in Cairo.
Okay.
And I went there also with a nice Egyptian guy, young man. I was a kid, you know, I was like 19, 20 years old. I was really young. And this guy was a little bit older, but he was really friendly. So we went to the ticket booth, you know, and the guy also, he asked, tickets like, my partner there, he said, yeah, one Egyptian and one foreigner. And the guy at the booth asked, yeah, well, who is the Egyptian of you two, you know, because I do have a dark complexion,
sure,
you know.
Yeah.
And it was the same thing, you know, I had to pay 10 times more than him, you know, just to get in. I was a real poor student, basically, you know, not even a student, but just a traveler, you know, and that bugged me, you know.
Yeah.
But that Argentinian story is really unfortunate, because if that little girl just could have shut up, you know.
Yeah, you'd have gotten in.
Yeah, I could have saved a lot of money, you know. Of money, but $10 maybe, you know, they paid more, you know.
Thinking back to the Taj Mahal thing still bothers me too.
Yeah.
I just read that the government there now, they're going to start restricting the number of Indians who can come. And so, because they want to make more money from the foreigners, and there's too many Indian tourists coming to see their cultural relics.
Yeah.
And I remember driving in a tuk-tuk right near the Taj Mahal by the river there are some of the worst slums I've ever seen.
Yeah.
Very, very poor people.
Just outside of the... Agra sucks, you know. Agra is such a shithole. Yeah. You know, there, Donald Trump's word would really apply, you know.
Yeah.
God, is that a shithole, you know.
Sure. And so those people probably have never seen this
building. This building.
It's famous. One of the most famous buildings in the world. They've never seen it because they can't afford 25 cents to go in.
Mm.
So if you really want to make it more fair, I mean, I guess I get it. Most foreigners do have a lot more money than most Indians.
Mm.
Man, make it free for the locals.
Mm.
And at least give, like, open up for 4 hours. For locals only. Let them all in for free. I know it's going to be crowded, but deal with it. So if that's really important for you, because this is their history, and they can't even experience their own history because it's out of their price range. And now they're going to be even closing it off more for them just to make more money from the tourists. Mm. It's sad.
Mm, it's sad. It's sad.
Yeah, I wish they could make it more equitable.
Mm.
You know, so, like a lot of American museums, for example, maybe Europe too, they'll have a free day.
Ah, yeah.
Like one day a month it's free.
Yeah, in America it's like that. Yeah.
And every other day you pay $20 to get it. And if you want to go on the free day, it's crowded. But a lot of people, that's the only day they can't afford to pay.
That's exactly how I did the American museums, you know.
Oh, of course.
I went on the free day.
You must have got on the free day.
Yeah. In Europe, in Germany, I can say for Germany, because I don't know about the rest of Europe, but Germany is, in that sense, it's really social. They have like different prices for, like, if you are a dole or social security recipient and you have a pass, you show that, and then usually you get in free. And I really think it should be like that, because I really think education and cultural things should be open to also poor people, you know, because, you know, that's a very good way of keeping them in a good state, you know.
And it's something to say, like, look, you should be proud of this. This is your history.
Mm.
And it's a really beautiful thing. And it's cool that you have this in your culture.
Mm.
And your culture isn't just this shithole town, to use the same term.
Mm.
It's more than that. So I wish it could be that way.
Yeah. Man, I wish that India, you know, I have such a strong affinity for India and such, because it's like, it's been part of my history, you know. I really hope that they somehow can, you know, but there's no hope really, you know, that they ever get it together, you know, to control their population a little bit more. Because
right.
Like what you were saying about Taj Mahal, I can see the official point too, you know. Maybe if there's too many Indians, you know, then you can close Taj Mahal down completely, because there'll be just millions of people that you can't even...
Yeah. Well, it's actually a good sign that there's so many people, because that means there is a growing middle class, and they are able to travel to Agra and see their Taj Mahal.
Yeah.
But there's also still a lot of poor people.
Poor people, yeah. And the middle class, they're already swamping like Goa, no? You've been to Goa, no?
No.
No, not yet.
Oh, okay. Middle like class the, Indians.
Are yeah, the formerly famous beaches, they're like being frequented more by Indian tourists now than foreign tourists, you know. The foreign tourists made it popular, but they are out now, kind of.
Okay.
It's the middle class Indians that go there and party now.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah.
Oh. Well, that's I see that as a sign of progress, though, that they're bringing themselves out of poverty slowly, but it's happening.
Mm.
Yeah, a while back, National Geographic, probably at least 5 years ago, they did this issue where about population. And you're talking about controlling population.
Mm. Like getting the birth rate down.
And getting the birth rate down, and how different countries have done it. And of course, China has enforced it with strong-handed, heavy-handed government. You can only have one kid. Okay.
For a while, for 20 years or something.
Yeah, right. But they really profiled Brazil.
Ah.
And how Brazil, their population has stopped growing. And they think it's mostly because of soap operas, interestingly enough.
Wow.
Because Brazilians and Latin Americans love soap operas. It's on primetime TV. These are the most famous programs. And they show these rich people and elegant people living amazing lives. Mansions and stuff. And none of them have more than two kids.
Yeah.
A lot of them don't have any on the TV shows.
Mm.
And they actually think that had a huge effect on Brazil's population.
Mm.
That it made people saw that. And they said, oh, well, I want to have that life, so I shouldn't have so many kids.
Yeah.
It's interesting.
Yeah, that's interesting, really. If that works, that's good.
Yeah. And there was this guy, I think unfortunately he just passed away, and I think Hans Rosling, mm-hmm. who's from Norway maybe,
mm-hmm.
or Sweden I think, and he did these really cool presentations about population, and he pulled an audience, I think this was for a TED talk, he pulled the audience, he said, how many kids on average do you think they have in Bangladesh?
Mm.
And it was the four possible answers were 2, 3, 4, or 5, mm-hmm. and almost everyone said, well, 5.
Yeah.
And some people said 4, but he said, no, the answer now is 2.
Really?
That's good.
Yeah.
And he said it's changing so fast.
That's good.
That, and he showed some interviews with people. They said, no, I don't want more than 2 kids.
Mm.
And so he and National Geographic, they both think that the population of the world will top out around 2050 at around 9 billion. And after that, it will slowly start falling because people aren't having enough children.
Mm. I hope so.
So India is kind of the last country where they still have a high growth rate.
I think they're going to overtake China.
I think it's...
Within
the next few years, they're going
to... If they haven't already, you know, I almost think so. And then, okay, all these Mid-Eastern countries, they still have and the Maghreb states, you know, the North African, the Muslim countries, they still have a high...
Some
I think they have an average
too.
Of 4 to 5 children.
Right.
Which is also too much, you know.
Right. Well, again, in this National Geographic episode or issue, they talked about stages that countries go through.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And the first stage is high. People have many children.
Yeah.
But most of them die. Very preventable, nowadays preventable causes. And so the growth rate is, or the population is stable.
That's good. Mm.
It's good. It's great. And then they start, it's not great that they all die, but it's stable. Mm-hmm. Then what happens is medicine comes.
Yeah.
Very basic maternal care, and immunizations, and these things.
Or gloves, if the doctors or the midwives use gloves, then the mother and the child have a much higher survival rate.
Things like very basic things. Mm.
Sterile gloves.
Yeah, sterilization. And they're still having, the second stage is they still have a lot of kids, but now most of them live. And so the population shoots straight up.
Yeah.
And then the third and fourth stages are where it levels off, where they stop having so many kids because they realize, I don't need to have 9 kids just to hope that 2 of them survive.
Yeah.
And most of the world is in stage 3 and 4 now, where the population's stable again or declining. And I think it's not only a matter of time before the whole world enters those phases.
Yeah, I hope so. I think that's maybe that's palpable. I also think that 8 to 9 billion people would be the limit. 8 maybe even, but we are already at over 7, no?
Over 7, yeah.
Are we?
We're over 7.
My God.
Yeah, there's always this question though of how many can we sustain?
Mm.
And I don't know that anyone really knows the answer.
But you see, when I go into a Western supermarket now and I see like these chips and flips and this Haribo and these jelly sweets, you know, then I think, maybe they can produce like synthetic foods, you know?
Right, yeah.
People just eat gummy bear, you know, or or these paprika chips that are probably not made out of potatoes anymore.
Maybe.
You know?
I think synthetic meat is coming very soon.
Mm-hmm.
There's a company that's making these like cheeseburgers or hamburgers.
Really?
Right now they cost like $1,000. But it's all synthetic. No animals involved.
Wow.
They just take cells from animals, and so it tastes just like meat.
Grow them, yeah.
Yeah, grown in a lab.
You know, 30 years ago when I was in the Philippines, there was some ingenious people that they farmed worms and then they made hamburger meat out of it.
Worms?
Yeah, man. And the protein was also very, very good, and the taste was good. And I think there was hardly any difference. You know, it was a lot cheaper to produce. So, you know,
tasted
than
like
real
meat.
Beef. Yeah, I never had one, but I read about it.
Oh, okay.
And I was wondering, did you hear about that in Philippines?
No, not at all.
Not at all.
Oh no, I think they've moved on to killing bigger animals.
Maybe, yeah.
Cows and pigs.
Yeah.
Yeah, a lot of meat. They eat a lot of meat there. Yeah. They don't eat vegetables.
Pigs, no? Ah, yeah, they don't eat vegetables, huh?
They'll take a giant plate of rice
and
then scoop a meat with some sauce in it, like one scoop, and rice is the filler part. And so most people just eat
meat.
Three quarters of it is rice and one quarter of it's meat.
And then mostly pork, huh, probably?
A lot of pork.
No, because they're Christians. So, yeah,
they eat pork. And but also beef, also chicken, fish, a lot of fish, anything. It's, you know, some countries you go to, they'll eat anything that moves.
China.
Chinese will eat anything.
Anything. I heard that if you have a house cat, you even have to be afraid, you know, because your neighbors might eyeball it and say, hey, that might be good tasting, you know.
Yeah, well.
Yeah, Vietnam is like that, like a friend of mine told me. That if you have a cat and you let it outside the house, it might be eaten the next day, you know, by your neighbors.
Well, times are changing quickly in China. And a lot of people have pets now, pet dogs.
Ah, yeah.
Especially in the cities. You don't see pet dogs and cats. You don't see them being
wild.
Consumed anymore.
Oh, not anymore, yeah.
No, you see people pampering their dogs. Because a lot of the time they only have one child or four grandparents. Then if you have another generation of only one child, they have one child and then one grandchild, and that's it. And so I think a lot of the time though, if they have more money, they want to take care of something. They get a pet, they get a dog, and paint its hair pink.
Really?
And, yeah, and like put on clothes and carry it around in a baby stroller. And
so they're really doing everything that we used to do, no?
Yeah, they are. Yeah, for sure. I've only seen dog being eaten once in China, and it was in a little village in the south.
I just recently saw it, and I have some pictures maybe still on my camera, you know, in Sulawesi, that other island in Indonesia. I went to a market, they actually had pythons, they had bats, and they had dogs, you know. They had actually live dogs, and before my eyes, I pictured it, he clubbed the dog, then he made it ready for the customer, you know. That means they burn it like with a heat, like a flamethrower. Uh-huh. They burn off all the fur, it looks all black in the end, you know. Cut off the head and then present it to the customer. Cut the inside,
got
you know,
it.
Take all, got it, you know, and then I saw a dog being sold, you know.
You saw it being killed too.
Yeah, I saw it being killed, you know, and next there was a cage with cats, you know, and I've never seen sadder looking cats. The dogs were looking pretty sad too. They all knew that what was coming, you know.
Yeah.
Really, the cats were looking sad, you know.
Sure.
They knew what was coming, you know.
Yeah. Well, I shouldn't judge because still eat pigs.
Yeah,
pigs are very smart.
I think
too.
Also, what's the difference? Yeah, if you eat a cow or a pig or these other animals, you know, who are you to say don't eat dogs or cats?
Well, you can't eat this one, but you can eat that one.
Nah. Because I love cats, you know, you can't eat a cat.
Right, they're all animals.
Yeah.
Yeah. No, like I said, I think the day is coming. Maybe it's decades away, but I think it's going to happen where we don't eat animals anymore. Where this $1,000 hamburger used to be a $20,000 hamburger, and I think in a few years it'll be a $100 hamburger. Then it'll be a $1 hamburger.
And then they have the technology to actually, to produce food that's compatible with our system. No?
Yeah, tastes just like meat. Mm. Looks just like meat. It is meat, but never. That doesn't come from an animal that you killed.
Wow, that would be interesting.
Yeah. There's different ethicists, though, who talk about this, who say, if we stop eating cows, then we're not going to have cows anymore.
Yeah.
Right? And so now, so isn't that worse? Because all these cows now, they're living, a lot of them at least, are living an okay life.
If they have a pasture to go to.
They have a pasture. Yeah. You look at Argentina and the Pampas. Yeah. These cows roam free in the grass, and they eat all day, and they do whatever they want.
But then in Texas or so, they're not all of them are roaming free. No,
a lot of the time they're factory
inside.
Farms.
Yeah, for inside. No,
treated really badly. Yeah. Wallowing around in their own shit.
Yeah.
And they get pumped up with antibiotics so they don't die of disease. Traveling opens your eyes to a lot of things. That's one of them. Food. And you got to consider what you put in your body, but at the same time you got to eat whatever's there
available.
I mean, let's say we're vegans, or especially in the Philippines where they eat almost all meat. What are you going to do?
You're going to survive
there.
You
can eat a plate of rice, I guess. But you're not going to get any nutrition from that.
Mm.
It's just filler.
Really, they hardly eat vegetables there.
Do
they have markets? Markets like here?
Oh yeah, they have big markets. They have vegetables if
they have.
Yeah, you can buy vegetables, but if you go to like an eatery,
no,
very little.
Yeah.
It's maybe a tiny thing on the side.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Amazing.
It's an interesting question when you travel and you meet people and then they invite you for dinner. What do you do? If you have a restrictive diet, you're not willing to eat some animal for ethical reasons or any animals.
Yeah.
What do you do? Do you tell this lady who just spent 4 hours cooking a meal, like, no, I'm sorry, I can't eat your food?
I'm glad I don't have that problem. Really.
Right, me neither. Right, right. But in some ways, I think it's better to eat whatever's put in front of you.
Mm.
But I understand if you're vegetarian for ethical reasons, too. I get it. It's just not me. I don't know. But I think this problem will fix itself eventually. I'm hopeful. I don't know. You seem like pretty pessimistic about the world. I'm more optimistic.
No, yeah, no. Actually, I like when I meet young people from Germany that are coming out of Germany now, like that say young people, like say around 40s, you know, I find them very pessimistic because they add up the numbers, you know, that we are talking about. And they say this can't go on, you know, the pollution, the overpopulation, the food scarcity, maybe, you know, that to feed all these people, you know.
Yeah, there are issues.
There is issues. But no, I'm not that pessimistic, but I'm negative, you know. I'm negative. It's different than pessimistic. I also think that the world will go on forever. Aristotle said something about that.
Oh, okay. You think, if I'm hearing you right, you think the civilization will continue on, and that's a bad thing. It'd be better if we all just died off.
No, not really.
No?
No. But, yeah, it's going to go on forever. Aristotle said something, it's impossible to destroy the world or to destroy all this, you know. And he said that, like, already, like, 2,500 years ago, you know, same time of Buddha, you know. So that's really interesting.
Yeah.
I agree, you know. I mean, even if there was a nuclear war, you know, some of these human buggers, they would survive, you know, and carry on, honestly. I really believe that.
If you kill 99% of the people, that's still 70 million people left?
Yeah.
That's a lot of people.
That's still a lot of people, you know.
That's a lot of people.
But when we come to India, there I think pessimism, your critique of pessimism would meet me, you know. I would say I'm a little bit pessimistic about India because I know already that, like, around the Ganges plain, you know, that's also where they do a lot of their agriculture, you know, but the water is already contaminated by all the fertilizer.
Oh, yeah.
You know, the water is contaminated. You know, I really believe that India, they are going to really get some freak diseases that you've never heard of. They already have freak diseases that are nowhere in the world, like elephantitis, lepra, you know. Those only get in India, you know.
Things that we took care of a long time ago.
Now,
polio.
Polio.
Right. Oh, awful.
But I think if they carry on, it seems to me that they must develop some new diseases, you know, that are going to be so terrible, horrible, heinous, you know.
Yeah, that's true. A lot of dystopian fiction centers around that.
Fiction?
Like novels about the world ending. Mm. A lot of authors feel that a disease is going to wipe us all out.
Mm.
It's going to, that we won't have any immunities to.
Yeah. Yeah. That could be when you think about it, but I don't think about it really.
Right.
As a matter of fact, you know, like in these 1-2 days, you know what I mean. You know, I'm not going back to the West, and I'm, with what I know, I can maybe hopefully survive pretty well. Now, you know, like if everything goes wrong, I love New Zealand, you know, I like Australia, it's very expensive. It'd be more hard for me. I think the Asians are more welcoming, so I like to try Asia, you know.
Settle down in Asia?
Settle down and die in Asia, you know, have, hopefully find some nice people that I spend my time with, that I'm happy to spend my time with, you know. But, you know, like, okay, now I can, like, maybe find a connection and really say that, you know, I was born in a Western civilized country and it's not all good, you know. Sometimes, and that's what I sometimes like to convey also to my Asian brethren, you know, that actually it's, their life is not as bad, and that they, through the mass media, they get manipulated, that they think that life is much better in the West. I can tell you, to all the listeners, to, you know, there will probably only be 3 in the world who ever listen to this podcast, but it's not the case, you know. Life in the West can be just even much more hard because you have to deal with insanity in the family, insanity in the neighborhood. Like, for instance, I give you an idea. I was living in Berlin for 25 years and I was having some friends and stuff. And I tell you, in each house that you live in, the houses are usually just 4 stories high. Average German house in a big city is 4 stories. And then they maybe have between, on each story, they have between 2 and 3 parties or families living. But I can assure you that in each house there's one very, very troubled soul that makes it for the other parties very hard to live. Either drug addiction, alcoholism, or mental madness. insanity. But you know, when you live above or beneath that person, it's going to influence your life. You know, you're having guests. You know, you're going to explain to them, well, this guy is an alcoholic, or this guy is. I have schizophrenic neighbors. Yeah, I mean, but that's normal. That's normal in the West, you know. So I want to really reach out to all these poor Asians that think that they're so poor and not have a good life. I say, you guys are healthy, and you're also mentally healthy. And you don't have to go to the West, because that could be your undoing, you know. Just live your life, be what you are, and don't expect more than you can see and feel and touch.
Thanks once again to Chris Hunter for coming on the show, and thank you for listening. As usual, if you want some more information about me and some of the stuff that I've been up to, and including many of my photographs of Sri Lanka, you can always go to my website, 1000daysbetween.com. That's the number 1000daysbetween.com. Thanks once again, and I'll catch you next time.